This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Africa is a priority for the European Union, and we are very much aware that it is under a huge pressure. That the crisis could have consequences of an entirely different scale than in other parts of the world.
That was European Union Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell on a package of aid for Africa in dealing with the coronavirus impact. Details coming up. And on the 14th day of South Africa's national lockdown to stem the pandemic, the government is showing no mercy to those who break the rules. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The European Union announced yesterday it will earmark about $16 billion for Africa and other low-income regions to fight coronavirus. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
The financing does not include new money, but rather shifts existing loans and funds to the coronavirus response. Africa is the biggest winner in the package, getting about $3.8 billion of the total. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell.
Africa is a priority for the European Union, and we are very much aware that it is under a huge pressure. That the crisis could have consequences of an entirely different scale than in other parts of the world.
The funding for Africa will focus on strengthening health preparedness and response, as well as research into coronavirus. The EU is also earmarking about $80 million for African coronavirus testing labs with support from the Gates Foundation Philanthropy Group. Other EU funds are being channeled to poorer parts of Europe, as well as Asia, Latin America, and other regions. Borrell says the money will come from the EU's executive arm, European investment institutions, and member states.
Especially in countries without enough doctors, testing, and protective medical equipment, with no access to clean water, the consequences of the pandemic could be devastating.
Borrell adds that EU support will focus on the immediate health needs of vulnerable countries, on strengthening their national capacity, and on helping to mitigate the social and economic consequences of the virus. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies underscores major risk factors that could contribute to coronavirus spread across a continent that suffers from high levels of poverty, weak health systems, and crowded urban areas. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Joseph Siegel, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about the dangers and which countries could encounter the maximum number of risk factors.
I think Africa, like other countries, their first point of risk is mobility, exposure to international contacts through trade or tourism or other travel that has created the initial contacts and exposure. Today, now, I think 50 African countries have reported cases of coronavirus, so the pandemic is fairly well established in many countries. And so the focus is going to be reducing mobility within countries so that you don't amplify the spread. Each country is going to have to respond in its own way, depending on its own vulnerability. But to the extent that you can limit the spread into the high-density populations, you can minimize the impact. I think similarly, the idea is that you want to reduce large gatherings where you create situations that what they're calling super spreaders, where one individual can spread the virus to dozens or hundreds of others, again, greatly amplifying the effects. Rather, ideally, you want to have a very aggressive testing identification effort. And when individuals are identified as having the virus, try to keep them isolated, provide them treatment, but then preventing the further transmission. So all in all, that mobility, density of population, weak public health systems, countries that have been in conflict or have large displaced populations, countries that are lacking in transparency or free media, those are the countries that are likely to see more vulnerability to the spread of this virus.
So based on the study conducted by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, which African countries face the maximum number of risk factors that make them more vulnerable to witness a large-scale outbreak of coronavirus infection?
We have to caveat everything that we say in that nobody really knows for sure the trajectory that this virus will take. And so what we have done is tried to provide analysis that looks at 9 different common risk factors that affect the spread of infectious disease. And on this, we see certain African countries have high levels of vulnerability across multiple risk factors. And so those are the ones that we're particularly wanting to keep an eye on. And these are countries like South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, Nigeria, Cameroon, Central African Republic, Somalia. Now those come at the top of the list, but there are 15 countries, 20 countries that are particularly susceptible. Every country, of course, faces some degree of vulnerability, and each country is going to have to respond based on its own context. I think part of our intent in doing this risk analysis was to recognize that there is a varied degree of vulnerability across the continent, and there are varying degrees of strength. And so each country needs to do its own risk assessment and respond to try to mitigate its vulnerabilities to the best possible while utilizing the strengths that it brings.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy speaking with Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. It's day 14 of South Africa's national lockdown, and the government is showing no mercy to those who break the rules. A minister has been suspended and thousands have been arrested as the number of infected people nears 2,000 with close to 20 dead. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
When the 21 days of COVID-19 lockdown began 2 weeks ago, the government's instructions were clear: stay at home or be arrested. President Cyril Ramaphosa has taken the lead, suspending the communications minister after pictures emerged showing her enjoying a lunch at a friend's place. Political analyst Tiniko Maluleka says it's a good lesson to the public.
These are difficult and uncertain times that we expect more leadership from him, and for him to be calling to order ministers who step out of line.
So far, almost 20,000 people have been arrested for breaking the lockdown regulations, including a couple that decided to conduct a fully-fledged wedding party. The arrests have raised a lot of complaints against the law enforcers, but Police Minister Bekicela says staying at home is the best way to avoid any form of trouble from the police.
Very few people that they don't know what to do, but they choose to do otherwise. Police, I think, have done a good job up to this point, and the soldiers, I don't know why you should be frog march when you're supposed to be in the house. If you stay in the house, you behave, nobody will frog march you.
Those spreading fake news about the coronavirus have also been arrested. One man circulated a video alleging that COVID-19 testing kits were contaminated. A media freedom specialist, William Bird, warns the public to investigate all social media posts before forwarding them.
Is this post making me feel fearful, anxious? Does it make me feel angry? Does it make me think that I don't know what to do? Check other media houses. If none of them are carrying it, chances are it's completely made up and you should then definitely not share it on.
With experts warning that the number of infected people could sharply rise in the approaching winter season, the government says it is yet to decide if the 21 days of lockdown will be extended. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Some South African medical and health science students are stepping up early. Over 390 of them have volunteered to help at a university hospital designated for COVID-19 patients. 22-year-old Hannah Abrahams-Crocker is in her fifth year of med school at Stellenbosch University and says she just couldn't imagine herself sitting at home during the lockdown. Vicky Stark spoke to her.
Crocker believes that if someone chose to study medicine, it's their duty to help right now. On the front line, she's doing screening at Tigerberg Hospital, asking people who think they may have the new coronavirus a series of questions to see if they need to be tested. I asked if she's scared she could catch the virus.
Yeah, obviously, it's kind of uncharted territory. We've never dealt with anything like this before. Obviously, we have TB and all of that, so we've been trained on how to take the necessary precautions, but this is kind of a new level of that. So I think also because I live with three other people, it was kind of, I couldn't make this decision by myself. And I have asthma as well. So it was also kind of weighing up the risks and the benefits. But we've been trained really well in how to use our protective equipment. We have great doctors who supervise us. So I think as long as I'm taking the necessary precautions, I've kind of calmed myself.
Hannah's proud mom, Jennifer Crocker, says she's not afraid for her daughter, just worried sometimes, but says this is the work she's chosen to do, so she must do it.
She lives with us and my two other children, or young people, young adults. And so when she chose to go from being on the call centre, answering telephone queries, when they asked if she would, or she and others would be prepared to go onto the testing site, they were also asked to ask their families if they were comfortable, people they lived with, if they were comfortable with it. So we had a little family meeting, and we were unanimous that we thought that was fine. We obviously have an isolation tank she goes into, which used to be our hall. So she comes in and takes off her scrubs and sprays herself and changes shoes and comes through and puts her clothes in the washing machine, and we started while she showers, and she pretty much stays in her room. But, you know, it's pretty much that, you know, it isn't an extreme thing. We're just all being very careful.
Tigerberg Hospital Student Volunteer Coordinator Dr. Sarita Kannenberg stressed that all the Stellenbosch University students work under supervision. Those helping with the day-to-day function of wards know what they're doing, as they've already been taught that as part of their studies. But she says there are other jobs that require training.
Of course, these students aren't used to doing contact tracing and those type of things, but they catch on really quickly.
Dr. Kannenberg says students are also collecting data and statistics for the divisions of epidemiology and virology. They're also making masks for low-income communities, which government started testing this week.
People are anxious, but the amazing feeling of camaraderie amongst the doctors, amongst the students. So everyone is really, this is actually, I'm getting goose-flesh as I think about it, you know. People are just really coming to the party and they're really helping. Everyone just wants to help.
This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
We had a technical problem yesterday when we intended to run this report from Gift Agariga, so we're bringing it to you today. Nigeria's government has ordered a 2-week lockdown in parts of the country to stem the spread of the coronavirus, but thousands of people refuse to stay at home. Reporter Gift Agariga in Abuja takes a look at what this could mean for the country in the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic.
Health workers and government officials say they are worried by the refusal of thousands of Nigerians, especially those living in the suburbs, to comply with the lockdown order. In Nyanya, Duse Alahaji, Karu, Kubwa and other satellite towns around Abuja, people were seen moving about unconcerned about the risk of the novel coronavirus and not adhering to the social distancing rule. Vehicles, tricycles and commercial motorcycle operators were also seen moving around parts of the satellite towns. Abdu, a fruit and vegetable hawker, said he had to disobey the order to be able to eat. He says, "We are always going about looking for what to eat. If I stay at home, there will be nothing to eat." Godwin is a motorcycle mechanic.
I have a family that don't have anything as of this.
He says, I have a family to feed, and if I don't come out to work, my family will not be fed. If not for this reason, I would have stayed back home.
Was because so we move up and down because of
a lie, because no two government they give me. That is why I found the fine water at the top.
A situation whereby you did not plan how you are going to take care of your family and one or the other. Maybe you are trying to avoid contacting of the virus. You end up facing what they call corona hungry. But that one it also can equally kill.
They are supposed to come out because I cannot leave my children hungry. Nobody is feeding them for house.
Governments around the world have ordered their citizens to stay at home, except for essential errands, such as getting food in an effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. Scientists say social distancing, reducing contact among people, is the most effective way to halt the coronavirus. In Nigeria, security personnel deployed to enforce the lockdown were on major roads, stopping vehicles to ascertain the identities of the occupants. Iharu Atta is the chairman of the Abuja Ministerial Tax Team. He enumerated the challenges they face in ensuring that people comply to the lockdown directive.
Most people in the suburbs believe that it's an early disease. When I go around and meet them, I talk to them. Many persons want to come out. Even some persons who may not have been to come out just want to come out.
Atta stressed that security forces are committed to enforcing compliance with the lockdown directive.
We have been arrested. Even today we arrested a policeman who was using his car as a taxi, carrying passengers around. We arrested some other vehicles. We arrested some tricycles and some motorcycles.
Dr. Lars Eze, a public health specialist, says those who ignore the lockdown order put all citizens at risk.
If there are people that are already positive with the virus that find themselves in that location or community, of course, we could see more cases. Also, in health, education is a key component, creating awareness and educating people.
President Muhammad Buhari issued a 2-week lockdown for most cities in the country on March 30th. The order includes most public transportation and grounds all passenger air traffic, essential workers for public health, security, power transmission and food production are exempted from the order. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Zimbabwe's economic decline and the massive closure of companies over the past decades have fostered a huge shift in its population. Many work in the informal sector or are self-employed. COVID-19 has forced the country into a 21-day lockdown. This brings new challenges for people in the informal sector. Reporter Kuzazanawashi has the details.
Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Pali, an online publication that covers parliament business and political developments. He says informal sector workers are some of the most affected by the very communicable coronavirus.
Yeah, I think the informal sector will be completely devastated. The guys in the informal sector depend on sales from that day for their livelihood. Going for 21 days without earning any income is going to be very difficult for them to survive. And I think there's need for social protection measures.
Informal traders include vendors, farmers, self-employed plumbers, electricians, among many others. Farmers with products ready for the market were most affected when the lockdown was announced and markets suddenly closed. Charles Dewa is a business analyst who focuses on Zimbabwe's biggest informal markets, Mbare Musika and CSO. He says the lockdown has created challenges, but they are adapting.
We are trying to put together measures from an agricultural perspective. We are putting together a supply chain so that we move food from farmers to consumers, bypassing informal markets where people used to congregate, so that we adhere with the social distance requirements of dealing with COVID-19.
The food markets have since been reopened, but with strict measures to ensure limited traffic. Dewa says they are working to adopt the method that bread is delivered across the city, which will minimize the number of people who will be served at any given point. neighboring South Africa recently authorized informal traders to return to work, but they will need official approval. Dewa says Zimbabwe will need adjustments to borrow from that system.
It needs to be carefully done. South Africa doesn't have a big informal trading. It's more of a formal economy. In our case, so we are trying to re-register people. We need to know who's doing what, where. All these informal markets, they need to be neat. Here's an opportunity to clean them up, put proper infrastructure, paving, organize the parking and everything.
He says this way markets can be kept clean when they officially open, and government will be able to assist informal traders when they can. Dodo says more must be done to help every worker who will not make any income during the lockdown. President Emmerson Mnangagwa recently announced that he had allowed free movement of agricultural-related business. This could be a farmer preparing for the next planting season or making a delivery of fresh produce. This announcement follows a public outcry after vendors lost their vegetables after they were confiscated and banned by the police. Images of the incident went viral and senior government officials spoke against the action. Government has since announced that those vendors will be compensated. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
Botswana's security forces are fighting back against an unprecedented rise in rhino poaching, killing 5 poaching suspects in 2 incidents last week. The Southern African country has seen nearly 50 rhinos poached in the past 10 months. Mokendisi Dube reports from the capital, Habrone.
Botswana has seen an unprecedented rise in rhinoceros poaching in the last 12 months. The government reports nearly 50 of the animals have been killed in the last 10 months, about one-tenth of the country's rhino population. Officials say at this rate, the black rhino population, which numbers just a few dozen, could be wiped out by the end of next year. But Botswana's security forces are taking the fight to the poachers. This week, 5 suspected poachers were killed in 2 incidents. On Monday, 1 poaching suspect was gunned down in a confrontation with local soldiers. 4 more suspected poachers were killed 2 days later in the thickets of the Okavango Delta, home to most of the country's rhinos. President Mokgweetsi Masisi has warned his government to fight the poachers, most of whom come in from neighboring Namibia and Zambia.
There are serious problems of poaching, and poachers do not bear a spear or a knobkerrie or a knife like some of those who break into households. Poachers bear sophisticated arms, and poachers are sufficiently radicalized to kill. So they're dangerous. We put an army in place to defend this country. So any intruder is an enemy. And unfortunately, as with any war, there are casualties.
A Botswana soldier was killed last month during an exchange with suspected poachers in the northwestern parts of the country. A conservationist, Neil Fitt, says the recent killing of suspected poachers is proof the government and the Botswana Defence Forces are on the right path.
Obviously, the taking of any life is not to be condoned. One has to try not to do that. However, as I think we all know, in the last year or so, the poaching incidents in Botswana have increased dramatically. We've lost a lot of rhinos, and we're not too sure how many elephants we've also lost. The fact that the BDF are actually upping their game plan, I think, is a very good thing.
He warns poachers will try to take advantage of the reduced tourism activity due to the outbreak of coronavirus.
We must also remember at this time, with the pandemic that we actually have, the tourism operations in the whole areas have downscaled, which I believe the poachers will be trying to take advantage of. So there will be, I think you'll find, an upsurge in the poaching activity.
Botswana's government denies the upsurge is due to a decision to disarm an anti-poaching unit last year. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And on behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, I'm Yehye Suhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.